And welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
And I'm Lynn Langit.
Lynn Langit, who the heck are you? Where's Dan?
Well, Dan's not here, so yep. I'm here. So I'm a developer evangelist from Southern California, and I'm up here in Redmond this week for some product training on Denali and for an internal Microsoft employee conference.
Okay, so Denali is the next version of SQL Server.
It is.
Right? And so you're learning all about that. I want to talk a little bit about that later on. But you've been involved in some really cool projects over the years. I know that you've done something in Africa. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, I've personally volunteered on one of the largest electronic medical records projects in Zambia. It's called Smart Care. And I provide technical training to the dev team on my vacation. And
nice.
when I'm not there, we work remotely over Skype. We support the development of the touch application.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So what does this application do for them?
It's a continuous electronic medical records in a country that has, you know, severe health crisis and very minimally trained medical professionals. So it's a touch input that the nurses can go ahead and put the symptoms in, and then it will, you know, output the appropriate, whether it's TB, malaria, or HIV drugs.
Hmm.
Saves lives.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So, well, that's very, very cool. So let's actually jump into our top stories here. And the first one I want to talk about is the Windows Azure Toolkit for social games. Have you seen this?
No, this is a new thing, just came out.
Yeah, so this is a preview of a new toolkit, set of APIs, if you will. So I'm sure you're familiar with Zynga, playing Farmville.
And yeah, too much.
I know you want me to join your mafia. I'm thinking about it. But let's say that you wanted to build your own social media-enabled game. Well, there's a lot of plumbing that you need to think about. How do you take care of high score boards? How do you think about achievements? How do you think about taking payments, for example?
Mm-hmm.
And so this is what the Windows Azure Toolkit for Social Games is set out to help you do that.
So it gives you the plumbing pieces so that you can just plug in to use Azure Table Storage or SQL Azure Storage and maybe use some of the other components of the Azure platform to leverage your game.
Right, exactly. And so for micropayments, if you wanted to sell in-game gold or whatever, then you can start interfacing with Facebook. They don't have that implemented as of today, but it's coming very soon. And it just gives you the flexibility to build on top of Azure, which is great so that when your game becomes the next big hit sensation, you can scale up as easily as you want to. Or if it doesn't work out as planned, then you didn't just invest in this huge data center resource. So that's really cool and exciting to see that coming out here. Next one is there's a lot of changes that were announced this week around Windows Phone Marketplace, and a lot of these changes are actually coinciding with the Mango release.
Right.
So starting on August 22nd, I believe, you'll be able to actually build and ship your games. Well, you can build today, but you'll be able to submit your games to the Windows Phone Marketplace if they're based on the Mango SDK. And so that doesn't mean that they'll go live that day, but they're telling us that they'll start taking submissions that day so that you're at least queued up and go through all that pipeline process.
And aren't we also opening up the markets where developers can participate through this release?
That's right. So there's going to be 7 new developer markets. Don't ask me to name them. I can't remember the countries. And then 19 other consumer markets where you'll be able to actually use Windows Phone. I know Brazil's one of them, so that's really cool. So definitely a lot of really cool things coming. The other thing that I like about this is that there's actually they're not calling it a private marketplace, but it's more of a targeted marketplace. So let's say that you are, I always fall back on the classic example of Amazon. Amazon has an application for consumers to actually browse within Amazon and shop on their site, right? But let's say that they wanted to build an application for their employees, like their Amazon Fresh drivers, to actually see where they're going next. That's not something that you want to show up when my mom searches for Amazon on her phone. It's strictly for their drivers. So instead, what they can do is they can publish that application in the marketplace, and they can then send a deep link to that application for their drivers. When my mom searches marketplace, it won't show up for her, but when the drivers get the link in their email or whatnot, they can install that.
So it's
app.
Really private.
It's private
apps.
I want to avoid calling it private because, you know, if one of those links happened to make their way out on a Twitter feed, people could find that. But it's not really designed for the average consumer. So it's more they're calling it targeted because it really is trying to get the apps to the right place without, you know, having my mom accidentally stumble upon them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, makes sense.
So that's very cool. And then also in the Windows Phone, I found this interesting. Now, neither one of us are advertising experts, so it's hard for us to comment on the finer points of this. But there was basically a bake-off that a few Windows Phone 7 developers did where they were using the Microsoft Advertising SDK and the Google AdMob SDK. So what they did is they published the application into two different flavors so that they were using 50% of the time the Google AdMob SDK and 50% of the time the Microsoft Ad SDK. And what they found was actually 71% higher yield for the Microsoft Advertising SDK.
Wow.
Which is important, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's money in your pocket as an application developer.
We all like to code, but, we're coding for money.
Exactly. Or, I mean, money to buy pizza and beer at the end of the day, right? So that's definitely important. Have you built a Windows Phone app yet?
I did, but I didn't release it.
You didn't release
it?
How
about
okay.
you?
No, I haven't. Every time I sit down to think about the next big thing, I do a quick search on the marketplace and I find that, someone else has done it or has done it better.
Exactly. My Starbucks app,
Someone keeps
doing it better.
Exactly. Which is a great thing, right? It's great that people are jumping on those opportunities. But if I did sit down to build an app, there's a lot of stuff that you kind of have to learn as an application developer, mm-hmm. especially since, if you join a team to build an ASP.NET application, you're going to learn from previous versions and from the team around you about how to market it and, what patterns to use and things like that. You can kind of sit on the collective knowledge of the team, if you will. But if you are an independent Windows Phone developer, like this gentleman was, he actually takes you through his entire experience from cradle to marketplace of this application. What I like about that is he says, one of the first things he says is before you start building the application and writing code in Visual Studio, that can be fun, but sit down and just take a breather and say, what do I really want my application to be? What's the experience that I'm shooting for? And so he actually went through and he storyboarded all the different experiences within his application and put little notes. And so this blog post takes you through that.
Sounds like I need to take his advice.
Yeah.
I can get my app, to the state it's publishable.
Exactly. So good luck on the Starbucks app. Step one, launch a worldwide coffee brand, I guess. So have you seen the Visual Studio Toolbox?
Not yet. But when we were reviewing the show, I'm really interested in this because the more powerful my Visual Studio can be, the better.
Exactly. So we have power toys.
I have those.
And you have those. Of course, I have all those.
Yeah.
And here's another one called Power Commands.
Got to get those.
So I like Robert covering this. In fact, this is one that he wasn't even aware of until he went to the extension manager and saw that this thing had been downloaded a quarter million times. So chances are anyone watching the show already knows about it. We're the last to discover it. But Power Commands gives you some nice little things. Few that I liked, right-click on a file and say open location. It opens that up in Explorer.
Yeah.
Or copy location. It copies the entire path so you can then paste that somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is just being able to quickly collapse all the projects windows within Visual Studio. And what's cool about the PowerToys/tools/commands is that they kind of use this to get a lot of feedback about things that they're playing around with, the Visual Studio Core team.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're starting to actually incorporate these into future releases. So based on the feedback, based on the development cycles, when they can squeeze these in, these will just be part of the future version of the product. But you can have them now for free.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I know that you're a big kind of data geek.
Yeah,
huh?
So I guess I should talk about this one.
Yeah, sure.
So if you haven't pulled down Denali CTP3, which was released to the public last week, you really should. I'm actually up here 40 hours of internal Microsoft training and just scratching the surface of a lot of the new features. This is just one sort of cool thing. It's Denali getting the .NET style format command. So you can see in there that you can just use the formatting capability that you're used to from the .NET framework right inside of Denali. And sort of as a trend, we're seeing more and more sort of crossover and overlap so that you can be more productive with your .NET stuff inside of the database environment.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, you can basically use it right within your T-SQL instead of having to pull down the app and then change the data around, right? So that's really neat. Any other favorite features of Denali that you can talk about?
The thing that I've been working on, I'm going to be presenting on, is the Juno interface, which I think is really sort of the big feature set for developers because, you don't want to leave Visual Studio. You don't want to tab back and forth into Management Studio because it kills your productivity. So you're going to see just a lot of what you got in Management Studio plus features that you're looking for as a developer like refactoring inside of SQL code inside of Visual Studio. So I'm really liking it.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So you're up here for a 40-hour course,
yeah.
huh?
Yeah.
Nice. So next one, you know, you've probably seen Larry's show on Channel 9, Defrag. Mm-hmm. Well, I thought this was aptly named, this question that came up that Gove answers here, and that is, should I defrag an SSD? You know, I'm religious about defragging and about applying Windows updates. I mean, Tuesdays, a lot of sysadmins hate them. I am just Tuesday morning, I'm like looking at Windows update.
I'm religious too, but I'm religious about going to Fry's and buying SSDs.
Oh yeah, exactly. So the thing about this is that that as it turns out, you don't actually have to defrag SSDs because it's basically like random access. There's no moving parts, right? Mm-hmm. And in fact, as Gove points out here, there's actually a detriment to defragging SSDs, in which you can actually only write to or read from an SSD a limited number of times. I think it's in the tens of thousands of times. But obviously, defragging causes unnecessary reads and writes to your hard drive. So, you know, why bear that extra cost if you don't have to? And then here's another one, which is 50 plus great free tools for .NET developers. I ran through this list. There's a lot of really good ones on there. I'm drawing a blank about them, but I know you're going to talk about a new one here momentarily as your pick of the week.
Yeah. So tools, more power. More
exactly.
Tools, more power.
Yeah, it's all about power. It's all about, you know, what else can I add to this thing? And this is an update from another story we had last week. We actually launched two user voice sites, one for Visual Studio ALM and one for Visual Studio. So just as an update to that story, they have gone back and consolidated that into a single user voice site. So that's kind of interesting. The other thing that's interesting here is a lot of people, number one suggestion, improve the performance of Visual Studio. So I know that's getting a lot of lot of serious attention. But also creating a 64-bit version of Visual Studio. A lot of people are asking, hey, why isn't Visual Studio 64-bit? And there's actually a really good reason. If you go back and read Rico, he's the former Visual Studio architect, read his post about why there isn't a Visual Studio 64-bit version, but where applicable, there's things like the 64-bit debugger and things like that. So really, it remains to be seen whether or not we'll ever have a native 64-bit version of Visual Studio, but nevertheless, a lot of people are really voting that up.
Yeah, and we do pay attention to the things that customers want. We have this for SQL Server, for Denali as well.
Oh, you do?
So this is out, and for SQL Azure. So, and the product teams, you know, I'm in the training with the teams this week. They are telling all of us to go and tell our customers, really vote. They're reading this stuff.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's really cool. It actually kind of reminds me, Scott Hanselman posted I don't think it was user voice at the time, but it was a voting poll for his Baby Smash application.
Yeah.
And Dan and I went on there and we made a suggestion that Baby Smash has to support MMORPG style, you know, and I want my babies to be playing against other babies in the area, regional tournaments, all that stuff. We asked people on the show to actually go vote up that. Scott had no idea that we made that recommendation. He just all of a sudden is getting bombarded with this particular request. So I have to wonder to what extent people game the system here. But in any event, it's a nice, really easy to use interface for making your suggestion and then voting that up. So that's cool. So that brings us to Picks of the Week. And actually, mine is also mentioning Scott Hanselman here. So a lot of people ask, you know, how do you do a technical screencast? You make screencasts, right?
Oh, yeah. I probably make 1 to 3 per week. So when you showed me this as your Pick of the Week, I said, wow, I need to use that myself because you can't be too good at a screencast.
That's absolutely correct. And, you know, Scott Hanselman being the OCD kind of perfectionist that we can all learn from.
Isn't his name Hanselbot?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's multiple of them. But, you know, the guy's diabetic, so I think he wakes up in the middle of the night to like check his insulin, and then he's just up, and he'll just spend hours and hours doing stuff that the rest of us are sleeping. But Scott takes you through a nice little set of steps here, and I actually learned a lot of what I did, what I do when I make screencasts for Channel 9 and whatnot from Scott. So I thought he put together a really nice, some of it's common sense stuff like use large fonts, but other stuff is like how do you actually choose the output that you're encoding to, and that's where it can become you know, kind of rocket science sometimes.
Awesome.
And so you actually have 2 picks of the week, not sure how many people we give that to, but we're going to give you that honor.
Cool. So my first pick of the week, and by the way, that's my well-earned Kinect beta tester avatar there.
Nice.
Yeah, so is a Small Basic 1.0. I've been doing a huge amount of work developing courseware to introduce children ages 10 and up to programming, and a lot of it is using Small Basic. So this is a big release for the team. This is their 1.0 release, and it includes a lot of support for localization. Small Basic is being used all over the world. The courseware that we created is found at www.teachingkidsprogramming.org, and it's all free. We have a, you know, an introductory set that's being used in after-school programs. It's about 20 hours worth of courseware. So try it out.
That's awesome. And so, you know, Basic was the first language I picked up. I think I was like 7 and reading through this book and was like, oh, yeah, I want to try that. So how is Small Basic, you know, is it the same or different than the Basic that I, you know, cut my teeth on?
Well, I don't know exactly what you cut your teeth on, but it looks like Logo.
Okay.
So a lot of people were in that kind of environment. But it's built on .NET. There's actually a graduate button in the IDE, so you have this on-ramp and learning path. The other thing that's great about the IDE is it's super simple. There's no project solutions or whatever. You just write code, click execute. So it's a really quick feedback path and that engages young kids.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And so if I, you know, let's say that I'm not a teacher necessarily, but I want to teach my nephews how to code, can I use your curriculum for that?
Yeah,
is that what was designed for anybody to kind of pick up?
It's for programmers, it's for school teachers, and in our site, which is the Teaching Kids Programming site, we have video-based training based on our iterations teaching kids all over the world. Me and my co-founder have actually taught over 1,000 kids in the last 18 months, so we've had a lot of practice, a lot of iterations. The other thing is we wrote extensions to the language, and these are open source at CodePlex. It's Extend Small Basic, to make the language even more discoverable, and we added documentation that's got like fun, almost Easter egg things in it.
Nice.
So that causes the kids to do discovery and exploration.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So do you have an agreement with these 1,000 kids that once they IPO that you get some some founder shares or something
like
that?
Yeah, I'll be okay in my retirement.
Nice.
Right?
That's awesome. Good thinking. And so your second pick of the week, tell us about this, approval test.
Yeah, this is an open source library that we actually used when we created the Small Basic extensions, and it kind of goes with the theme of more power. You know, a lot of us are doing test-driven development. I know I was, and I do it a lot more with approval tests because sometimes you want to test something that is more complex than an assert. You want to test a GUI, you want to test a complex object, even something like a sound file. Mm-hmm. What this does is this creates a snap of whatever it is that you've tested just using approvals.approve, and then you can put it in a diff tool. That's what the screenshot is showing there, you know, whether it's a WinDiff or Beyond Compare or whatever. And it's interesting because it's actually written in all the languages that are listed up at the top. So whether you're C#, Java, VB.NET, PHP, Ruby, whatever, it's in all these different languages, and it's completely open source and extendable. So It moves your testing to more of like a behavior-driven, mm-hmm. so it's a higher level.
Yep.
So you can test a lot. Another great place to use this is with legacy code. So if you're in a legacy project and you want to get some tests around it, but you know you do not have the resources to put in all these bazillion asserts, you can just throw approvals against it.
Oh, fantastic. That's cool. Well, I'm glad we gave you two picks of the week because I just learned about two cool new things.
Thank you.
Awesome. Well, thanks for being on the show, Lynn.
Sure, it was great.
Yeah, we'll see you next week.